Morning. Today's daf and getting Zion Aleph. We are nine Amud Beis. We thank Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as long as Zechon Ishmael Lee Begavriela Bashmuel. After finishing up all the gemaras that dealt with therapies and medicines, the Chachmas Refuah of the Chazal, the gemara then moved back to our Mishnah to discuss our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, the start of the seventh parak of the Masechta, talked about somebody who suffered from Kordaikas. Kordaikas is some sort of temporary bit of insanity. He's possessed. Is Rashi's description, and so therefore he's not right now. He's not currently of sound mind. So what becomes of the Kordaikas? So if he tries to issue a get while under the state of Kordaikas, so the Gemara says that's nothing. So the Mishnah going all the way back to Samach Zayinim and Beit says Mishachzu Kordaikas Vamakis Forget Liishti Lo Amar Klum. So making instructions while under the influence of Kordaikas. So the it's a good way to say it, under the influence. So while making a statement under the influence, so the Gemara, the Mishnah says that's nothing. If let's say he was of sound mind and he said ready to get for my wife and he gave instruction, and then afterwards achzu kardikas, then he was under the influence of kardikas, and then he tries to retract while under the influence. So ein dvar ma'achronim klum. So the Mishnah says ein dvar ma'achronim klum. That's nothing. It's totally meaningless. And now what exactly does that mean? So as we started yesterday, it was a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Exactly what that means. Rav Yochanan's position is as follows: while the husband is in a state of kordaikos, so Rav Yochanan says the shliach can't do anything. Meaning, right now, because of the current condition of the husband, even though when he gave instructions to the shliach he was of sound mind, but now because he's in a state where he is under the influence of kordaikos, so Rav Yochanan's position is he could do nothing right now. What are you going to have to do? You're going to have to wait. Wait till the man recovers. And once he makes a recovery, now the shliach, now and only now can the shliach go and deliver the get to the wife. So the Gemara was bothered. If that's true, what in the world does the Mishnah mean when the Mishnah says, ain dvar v'achronim klum? Oh, you can just simply ignore it. So what Rav Yochanan says is that the pshat in the Mishnah is that You don't have to give the instructions once again. Meaning that even though there was a period in time where the husband was a kordaikas, was under the influence, still, when he does recover, you can go back to the original instruction, and the shliach can deliver based on the original instruction, and it does not break the momentum between the original instructions and now as he's delivering it. That's Rav Yochanan's pshat. Reish Lakish gives a perhaps a simple pshat in the Mishnah, although the halacha goes like Rav Yochanan. But Reish Lakish gives a simple pshat in the Mishnah, and that is that because he instructed the shliach to deliver the get, to write and deliver the get while he was of sound mind. So you can, the shliach can deliver it. And even though he falls under the spell of kordaikas, it doesn't matter. The shliach can still deliver it even during that period of time. The Gemara yesterday said, what's the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish? So the Gemara says, really, it's a question of how to compare the kordaikas. Is a kordaikas more comparable to somebody who's sleeping? Meaning somebody who's sleeping is in a temporary state of of unconsciousness. So the kordaikas is very similar. He's under a spell. He's in an alternate state of unconsciousness, but so is sleeping. So Reish Lakish says it's the same. Don't tell me, says Reish Lakish, that when the husband's sleeping, the shliach can't deliver the get. That's patently absurd. That can't be. Obviously, just because he's sleeping doesn't mean that the shliach can't deliver the get. So it's the same thing with kordaikas. And Rav Yochanan's position is that no. Being under the influence of kordaikas is more like shota. It's more like insanity. You know that the husband cannot authorize the writing and the delivery of the get while being insane. So if he's under the influence of kordaikas, it's no different. The Gemara says that's the machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Adkan, that's what we saw yesterday in the Gemara. Umi Amar Rav Yochanan Hachi. Let's pick it up right where we left off yesterday on Ayin Omid Beis. And a continuation of this discussion between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Umi Amar Rav Yochanan Hachi. And does Rav Yochanan really say this right in the middle of Ayin Omid Beis? V'hamar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Shachar Bo Shnayim Or Rav Shnayim V'ramas. V'amar Kisra Get Lishti. Let's say a person had a terrible accident, a traumatic accident, trauma, and the two pipes were severed, the esophagus and the trachea. And they're both severed. And we know that the once the esophagus and trachea are severed, so he's holech lamos. It's a terminal condition. He's going to die. And so, and at that point in time, he gives instructions to write a get for his wife. So they're going to write it and they're going to deliver it. Now, they need to do it quickly because they can't give it to the wife after he's dead, and get lachar misa. So they'll do it quickly. But the point is, however, is that right now we can treat him as if he's alive. Vitanya. Then that we have now another mishnah. A brisa. Let's say somebody is in really blunt trauma. The person is cut up, or he's right now hanging on a cross. And again, we know that the person is in a terminal condition, and he says, "Ready to get for my wife." Hare Elu, I'm sorry, he gives a remiza. Okay, fine. So Hare Elu Yichtav Avinu. So what you can do is you can give and you can deliver. So right now the Gemara poses this as a kasha on Rav Yochanan. Now what's you're right. So what is the Gemara thinking? The Gemara is thinking right now that this is just as bad as Kordaikas. Meaning, even Rav Yochanan's position is that under the influence of Kordaikas, so you can't deliver the get for this husband because he's not in a state of consciousness, of reasonable consciousness. So the Gemara says, is this any better? And the Gemara's answer is yes, it is actually. So Hachi Hasha, the Gemara says they're not comparable. Hasam Daita Tzilisu Ukechishisuhu Daschilu Bei. So Hacha Daita Shigishtahim. So the Gemara says the difference is very simple. Meaning, in the case of Kordaikos, the person is not of sound mind. He does not have his reason about him. He does not have his wits about him. So even though he may be in a healthy state of being, a physically healthy state of being, but he's not mentally healthy. And if he's not mentally healthy, so Rav Yochanan says, therefore, he can't instruct his wife to give a get. And if after instruction he falls under the influence of Gerdikas during that period of time, the shliach cannot deliver the get, period. Masha'enkin, in these cases over here, the person is in a serious state and it's terminal, and the person's going to die. But meanwhile, between now and death, he's of sound mind. He's totally within reason. So the Gemara says the difference is actually pretty straightforward. Now the Gemara points out, so we resolve Rav Yochanan, we understand Shitas Rav Yochanan within this context. The Gemara says, but let's now turn our attention to Shmuel. The Gemara says, I'm bothered by the following. We have another statement by Shmuel, and it goes as follows. Shacha Boshnaim or Rav Shnaim. Again, a person had his two pipes severed, the trachea and the esophagus were severed, or the majority of them were severed. Ubarach, and he's running away. So this person is holech lamos. He's going to die. So me'idin alav. So what you can do now, and that's the last you saw of the person. So you didn't see the person actually die. You just simply saw him running away. And unfortunately, his two pipes were cut. So you know what's going to happen. The prognosis is actually very straightforward. The person is going to die. You can go back to the wife and you can report to the wife, I saw your husband dead. Even though you didn't see the actual death, but you know. So the Gemara says, now the Gemara is bothered because on one hand, Shmuel earlier said that he can instruct somebody to write a get for his wife, even though he's in the state of being, and here you can testify that the person's dead. So Amre Chayhu V'Sof Olamos. Again, the resolution over here is very simple and very straightforward. Meaning, in the case where Shmuel's first case, where he's instructing somebody to write a get. Meaning, because what's his current condition? His current condition is that he's alive. Yes, the condition is terminal. Yes, he's going to die. But that's true, but that's not his current condition. His current condition is that he's alive. Therefore, he can instruct somebody to write a get and deliver to his wife. Again, the window is very small in terms of how much time you have to deliver it, but halachically speaking, right now the status is alive. When you're the person who sees him in this condition, you can go back to the wife and report that he saw the husband die, even though you didn't see the husband die, but the severing of the two pipes is going to result in a pretty imminent death. So you can report that the husband died. That doesn't mean that when you saw him he's dead. It means you know what's going to happen. The prognosis is very simple. And it's pretty absolute. So there's no steering between Shmuel and Shmuel. Elameyata he gola al yadom. So the Gemara says, okay, let us now consider the following. So the two pipes are severed, the person's going to die. He's not dead yet, he's going to die. The Gemara says, why don't we consider the following? Alam Matanya with the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Shacha Boshnaim Rov Shnaim. Hareza Eino Gola. By accident. It was more like a manslaughter. You by accident severed the two pipes of somebody else. Shogig. and the person is going to die, as we just determined, the Gemara just established. And meanwhile, the Braisa says, you're not going to go into Galus, you're not going to go into exile. It goes without saying, the person is going to die, and if and when the person dies, and it's not really if, it's when the person dies, you're still exempt from having to go into Galus. So the Gemara says, I'm not following. Didn't we just conclude that the severing of the two pipes is going to result in an imminent death? So if you're the one responsible for the cutting of the two pipes, doesn't that mean that you should be sent into Galus? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, well, when it comes to being sent into Galus, so there's a criteria in terms of being sent into Galus. And even though you are responsible for, it was shogeg, it was inadvertent, but even though you're responsible for the death of that person, but it doesn't meet the criteria of being sent into Galus. What is the criteria of being sent into Galus? You have to be the reason and the only reason why the person died. The Gemara says, Chayshin Hashem Aruch Babalasa. The Gemara says, first of all, we're concerned the following. After he severed the two pipes, so then what happened was is that a wind came and the wind accelerated his death. So yes, of course, you had a hand in his death, but you weren't the only sole responsible party for causing his death. It could be that there was another cause that contributed to his accelerated death. Inami he karevis mitasa. Or the Gemara says is that after his two pipes were severed, so he's flailing, and his flailing in itself is going to accelerate his own death. And the Gemara says might be not. And the Gemara says in terms of these two suggestions in terms of what exactly was a contributing factor towards his death. Either it's the wind blowing or it's his own flailing. So the Gemara says, now there's going to be enough. So the Gemara says, well, if you shechted him in a windless house, right? The Gemara describes it often as Beis Deshisha. It's a marble home, meaning that there's no wind in the home. So if there's no wind in the home, so if he didn't flail, so you know that you're the only sole contributing factor to his death. If he flailed, so then he himself contributed to it. Or you shechted him outside and he didn't flail. So then if there was a wind, so the wind is a contributing factor. If he didn't flail, so you know that there wasn't a contributing factor and you were the only cause of his death. So basically what the Gemara says is leave Galus out of the discussion, because Galus has a certain criteria. In order to be Chayv Galus, there has to be only one reason why he died, and that's you and your mindless action that causes death. Just a very interesting. Just a very interesting Tosfos over here. Tosfos Chayshin and Shema Haruch Babalaso Dafka Begalus Chayshin Lahani Taimei. The Gemara Tosfos says that when we have this criteria of you being the sole responsible party for his death, and then and only then you're going to be sent into Galus. Tosfos says that's only Misa B'Shogei. That's only when you kill somebody inadvertently. However, says Tosfos, but when it comes to mezin, if you cause somebody's death, b'mezin, even though there may be another contributing factor, that's misa. That's a capital crime. Now, Tosfos says, and how do we know this? It's interesting. Tosfos says there's got to be some drasha. Now, it's one thing for me to say there's got to be some drasha because, you know, it's probably in the Gemara and chances are I forgot. For Tosfos to say there's got to be some drasha, that indicates that Tosfos knows Shas and Tosfos is holding and Tosfos right now off the top of his, not off the top of his head, but there's no absolute drasha. But Tosfos says, look, when we get to Makkos, we're going to see this time and again in Masechta Makkos, where there is a lot of differentiation in the world of Galus. Derech Aliyah, Derech Yerida, was it going in an upward motion, was it going in a downward motion? So we know that the criteria for Galus is very high in terms of when a person is going to be sent into Galus. So here also, the criteria is very high where, in order to be sent into Galus, you have to be the only factor that resulted in his death. Anytime there's a possible contributing factor, you're not going to be sent into Galus. But Tosfos says, but if it's misa b'mezid, if it's deliberate, if it was intentional murder, so there we don't look at contributing factors. There, if you murdered somebody, and even though there may have been a contributing factor accelerating to his death, you're still going to be chayv misa.
So I'm not sure when you someone kills someone who's a chayv, we say gavre ketila.
Yeah.
So why is it any different?
Well, you're the one who cut his. You're the one who cut his pipes.
You kill him, but he's still alive.
No. The Gemara over there is talking about where you killed the treifa. I mean, he already was a treifa.
He was a treifa before, right?
Yes. Here, you actually severed the pipes.
But meanwhile, he's alive, no?
Okay.
So she can get colors.
No, but again, so there's a. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that anytime there's a contributing factor, so you're not going to go into Golis. Tosa says that's just the way the rules go. Okay. All right. Let's continue. We are now nishtatek v'amin lenichtav leget liishtecha. The heading of the Mishnah. Okay. Let's remember the Mishnah taught us going back to. Going back to the beginning of the perek, that let's say somebody is a cheresh, and so let me use a language specifically using the Mishnah. Nishtatek, the person becomes a mute, right? Married becomes a mute, and va'amr lo nichtov get lishtecha, and we ask them the question: You want to get written for your wife? V'hirchin barosha, and he nods his head. So both can also shol shapamim. Now we don't know if he has das because he can't communicate, he can't speak. So the Mishnah says is that we're going to ask him three pointed questions. So the Mishnah says if he answers the questions correctly, so now intelligence validated, and now we can go ahead and we can deliver the get based on his instruction. The Gemara discusses. The Gemara has a lot of discussion about this. So first the Gemara says our intelligence test that we offered. Okay, the world of intelligence test is quote unquote a modern phenomena. The Mishnah already was talking intelligence testing, you know, circa 2,000 years ago. So
never said something before.
I mean, you're
not going to go to somebody.
All right, so let's see. Right? So lav nakte. So the Gemara's question is a very simple question. Okay, he nods his head. Good, he nods his head. So I nod my head very often as well. Doesn't mean I'm listening. It doesn't mean I understand the question. It's just I nod my head. So the Gemara is bothered by a very simple question. How do you know? That's a valid test. How do you know? He nods his head. Great. It could be that the correct answer required a head nod. And he just happened to have a head nod. So we don't really know if we have a valid test. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says, if you ask him three questions and he gets it right, it's a valid test. So Amar Rav Yosef, Bar Yomi, Amar Rav Nachman, Darmin Lebisi Rugin. So the Gemara says, well, if it's just like a physical tick in which he nods his head, so here's what you're going to do. Don't ask the questions three times successful in rapid fire. Ask the question, take a break. Ask the question, take a break, and ask the question again. So in other words, so it'd be a little bit more coincidental if it happens to be that he nodded his head at the right time. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, but still, we want a valid intelligence test. And over here, if all the answer demands is that a head nod, and all you did was just take a little break between question A and question B to question C, it could be that he nodded at the right time, but doesn't mean that he got it right. So the Amrin Aleichad. Lav vitrain hain. Vitrain lav echad hain. So the Gemara says, okay, so what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to switch it up. Make sure to ask questions which demand a yes answer, demand a no answer. So in other words, it's going to be a head nod, it's going to be a head shake. And interestingly, the Gemara now went from three questions now to six questions. But in other words, but basically, you're going to ask him a barrage of questions. Make sure to alternate. Make sure that that some of the questions demand a yes, some of the questions demand a no. And so it'll be a thorough testing that in fact he has his cognitive ability. The Bay Rabbi Yishmael Tanim, we learned in the Brisa, Dvarim Shal Yemosek Chamim B'Yemosek Shamim, V'Shal Yemosek Shamim B'Yemosek Chama. So according to the Brisa, the Gemara quotes in the Yeshiva Rabbi Yishmael, so the Brisa says like this. The questions are not going to just be a simple yes or no question, although, again, they are, because ultimately, you're either going to get a head nod or a head shake, but you're going to ask questions that are like seasonal questions. Ask him summer questions in the summer, ask him winter questions in the winter. Gemara says, "My nihu." So, ilay magluf kare visadina. The Gemara says, "Well, maybe you're going to ask him about whether or not he wants to wear a coat and it's the winter time, or ask him if he wants a coat and it's the hot summer." So, the Gemara says, "Maybe you're going to ask him seasonal questions like that." The Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, but that doesn't mean anything. Some people in the middle of summer are cold. Okay, just to ask any room full of people if the AC is to your liking. So what you're what you're going to get is half the room. It's going to it depends, but you're basically going to get half the room saying it's cold, half the room saying it's hot. Gemara says just to ask him if he wants a coat because you think it's hot and you think it's ridiculous now for someone to wear a coat. The Gemara says that's not ridiculous. Maybe he wants to wear a coat. Ella Beperi, so the Gemara says, so what you're going to do is you're going to ask him about seasonal fruits. Now I know we're no longer holding by seasonal fruits. We don't know from seasonal fruits, right? You want blueberries, you can get them anytime you want. It's rather amazing. But there used to be a day and age where you would only get fruits in season. Correct. We were in America, beyond spoiled. But anyway, ask him about seasonal fruits. So in other words, so if it's a season for a particular fruit, so hey, do you want blueberries now? And it's, let's say, not in season. So the expected answer now should be no. If he understands what season we're in, blueberries aren't coming out now. That's a ridiculous question. Of course, the answer is no. So the Gemara says that's how you understand Tanda Be'er Rabbi Shmuel. Again, the basic idea is that make sure to alternate between yeses and noes, and basically give him a small barrage of intelligence questions to make sure that, in fact, he has his cognitive ability. Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Rav. We're on the top of Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph. Today's daf. Cheresh yachol adaber mitoch haksav, kosher menos nen get lishto. You have a cheresh. Rashi over here writes, Shaya pikeach. So Rashi gives the context to this statement of Rav Kahana in the name of Rav. And that is that when he entered into marriage, so he had his mental abilities. He was a pikeach. He could speak, he could hear. He had his mental ability. And because of that, as he enters into Kedushin, into that state, so we know that the Kedushin is Minat Torah. In order to affect Kedushin between a husband and wife, you need Das. You need cognitive ability, both on the part of the husband and the wife. You have it in this particular situation. He, at the time of marriage, was lucid. And he could hear, and he could speak. V'tanam bi'avamos nizcharish hu onishtate lo yotzi olamis lefi she'en koch begerush charashos lefku Kedushin. And if either one of them, let right now, I'll tell you what. For the purpose of this discussion right now, let's leave it to the husband. And later this morning, we'll go to the wife. If the husband loses his cognitive ability after marriage has occurred, so the marriage you entered into is a marriage minat Torah, and now you can't extricate yourself from this marriage because he does not have das. So she'en koch begerusha charash lof ki kedusha chachma. V'kama rav di'im yachol adaber mitoch haksav di'odeh lechtov al haklaf kitzvu v'tenu get lishti atem ploni ufloni umas olehem pikuach gamorhu v'kos v'nosnen. And Rashi explaining the Gemara now says as follows. Here's what Rav Kahana means. If he could write instructions, he has cognitive ability. And so therefore, he now still falls under the category of chacham. He's a bardas. And so therefore, even though he can't verbalize, as long as he could write the instructions, the writing of instructions, A, serves to prove that in fact he has das, and B, actually reflect the instructions that he's going to divorce his wife. This is a statement of Rav. So the Gemara, Amar Rav Yosef, Maika Mashalan Tanina. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. What Rav is teaching us, Rav Kahana is quoting Rav, what Rav is teaching us is really already taught us in the Mishnah. I don't need an Amora, even though it's Rav, and even though Rav is on the border, but still, once we have a Mishnah, established Mishnah, what did he contribute to the whole discussion? Let's take a look back at the Mishnah. Nishtatek v'amar lo nechsov get lishtecha v'hirchem b'rosha bozgen oso shosha pa'amim imamar alav lav al hein hein hayre elech yechtev v'yidnu. The Mishnah says that even though, despite the fact that he can't talk, as long as he shows cognitive ability, so then he can instruct to deliver a get to his wife. So what difference is it between the Mishnah and what we're saying right now? So amar le Rebbe Zera ilim kamarchan ishani ilim. So the Gemara says, no, you can't compare the Mishnah's point to what Rav Kahana is teaching us in the name of Rav. The Mishnah, he's just a mute. he still is able to hear. The only thing he lost is his ability to speak. So we do not assume that an Elaim is a lav bardas. In fact, just the opposite. If he's just an Elaim, if he's just a mute, but he could still see and he could still hear, we assume that he's maintained cognitive ability. We're just not perfectly sure because he can't speak. We do it just a very simple cognitive test just to make sure, simple cognitive test in order to make sure that he can that he still has his wits about him. But in other words, but the default assumption is that he still is a bar das. Over here, what Rav Kahana is teaching us is a chiddush. The chiddush is that he's a cheresh. He didn't start off as a cheresh, but he becomes a cheresh, and now we don't know. Now we are suspicious of the fact that he may have lost his das. So that's the chiddush. As long as he can still write instructions, that's proof positive that he's a bar das. And then the Gemara quotes the Braisa de Tanya, and here the Braisa makes this point very clearly. Medaber veino shomea, zeu cheresh. Shomea veino medaber, zeu ilim. So if you could speak but you can't hear, so that's a cheresh. If you can hear but you can't speak, that's an ilim. Zeu v'zeh, ain kepichin lechol devehim. And the default assumption is that they're pikeach. In other words, they have their wits about them. And then the Gemara just for a moment talks a little bit about etymology, words, the echsiv, and how do I know that cheresh and ilam are appropriate for the various conditions. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Tehillim, "Vanika cheresh lo ashma ki ilam lo yipatech piv." Now pasuk in Tehillim says it very clearly: I am like a cheresh, I could not hear; I am like an ilam, I couldn't speak. Or another etymological explanation of the word ilam is ishtakel milula. It's no trickin; it's an acronym. The word ilam is ishtakel. That's your aleph. That's your lamed. Milula. That's your mem. It's no trickin. For his words were taken away from him; he can't speak. Anyway, that's the etymology of the day. So what comes out now is as follows: if you have someone who's either an ilam or a cheresh, cheresh over here just simply means he's deaf, not a deaf mute. If he's a mute or he's a deaf, not both. So the assumption is he's pikech l'chol dvarav, and it could very well be that that's what our Mishnah was dealing with. In fact, the Mishnah just simply says nishtatek. Sounds like from our Mishnah that he's only an ilam. So there, the default assumption is that he's a pikech. So under those circumstances, a simple cognitive test just to make sure that he still has his wits about him, and then of course he can get to his wife. He's a full bar das. What Rav Kahana is teaching us is a bigger chiddush. You have a cheresh; he is unable to both hear and speak, even though he had it at the time when he entered into the marriage. Now he lost it. Can he prove cognitive ability? And through ksiva, the answer is yes. If he can write, so then he can prove cognitive ability. Amar Ebzeri Kashile Akashile Detanya. The Gemara says, I'm bothered by the following. Im lo yagid prat le'ilam sheni yochola hagid. We know that in the end of Parshas Vayikra, there are three averas in the Torah, where if you violate any one of these three averas, you're chayv a carbon ola v'yored. One of the three averas mentioned over there is Shvuos HaEdus. Shvuos HaEdus basically goes like this. I owe somebody money, somebody owes me money, there's a towing, there's a nitan, and I subpoena a witness to testify on my behalf. And he says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any information. I swear I don't have any information. And he makes a shvur to the fact that he does know information. And meanwhile, he's lying. He does have information. He just didn't want to get involved. He didn't want to go to court. Kind of understandable, but at the same time, once I subpoena him to testify on my behalf, he has a mitzvah to testify on my behalf. And if he doesn't, im lo yagi, the Torah says, v'nasava no. So if he doesn't testify on my behalf, so then he's a chote, he's a sinner. And if he makes a shvua, and then he admits that he lied, so he has to bring a carbon shvua. Okay. Anyway. That's for somebody who has testimony but suppresses the testimony, is refusing to give testimony. Now, what if it's somebody who is a mute and he suppresses testimony? Is he in violation of Imlo Yagid? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. He's not in violation of Lo Yagid. And here's the Gemara's question essentially. I know he can't talk, but he can write. And didn't you tell me that writing is a valid form of communication? Rav Kahana Marav taught us that if a person can write, so that is clear instruction for somebody to deliver a get on his behalf. So writing is a proper form of communication. So why isn't this person going to be in violation of Im Lo Yagid? He can write testimony, can he? Amai ayochel hagid mitoch haksav. So amar le'abaye edus kamar chani edus rechmana amar mipiyam v'lo mipik savam. So Abaye gives a very fundamental answer, and that is as follows. Edus. Edus has to be verbal. There is no such thing as non-verbal edus. Edus has to be verbal. You're right. Writing is a proper form of communication. That's true. Nevertheless, if he can't speak, you can't testify. The Gemara says that defies the very definition of edus. Should bother you if that's true. So what about a shtar? Yeah. So what about a shtar? So the truth of the matter is, it's a long discussion. It's a lengthy discussion. We're not going to have a lengthy discussion. Well, the only thing I'm going to do, however, is I'm going to quote Rashi over here. Very interesting Rashi, because Rashi is sensitive to the fact that you have all the time shtaros and you have people signing on the shtar, and that's not verbal testimony. So if you look at Rashi, So Rashi says, so velomi pik savam ya'ida bebeis din delo dam l'shtar. Rashi says over here it's not comparable to a star. Shechasmu biyomo dehahu orche lahachi. So Rashi writes, now I'm not saying I fully understand what Rashi's saying, but I know what the words mean. What Rashi's saying, again, I don't know, I'm not giving a svara in Rashi, I'm just saying the simple pshan Rashi is that when you are signing on a document, you're testifying on that day, you're signing, not testifying, but yeah, in other words, you're verifying on that day. That's a better word. It's a better word. You're verifying on that day. You're signing to that which you verified. And Rashi ends off by saying, the Orche. So I'm going to quote the Rashi verbatim. Orche Lahachi. And this is the way it's done. It's normal. It's natural. Now again, I know it's bothering Rashi. It's what's bothering all of us. Meaning, the Gemara says that in order to give a testimony, it has to be verbal testimony. And meanwhile, stars work. So Rashi says, okay, yeah, I know that, but orche lahachi. Stars work because stars work. Now again, there obviously has to be more said within this Rashi, but Rashi's just simply dealing with the fact that we know stars work. But from our perspective, however, question's resolved. Meaning, why isn't somebody who is a mute going to be liable for Im Lo Yagid? Answer, because he can't testify. Testimony, by definition, has to be a verbal testimony. Mitzvah. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. Keshem shabot genoso legitin kach bot genoso limasos limatanos leadios uli yorshos. Just like we do a bedika forget. Just like in our Mishnah, we learned that you ask a barrage of questions to make sure that he has his cognitive ability and he can give a get. So the same thing is going to be true regarding business transactions, gifts, testimony, and Yerusha. That's a little bit strange. Didn't we just knock out testimony from the mute? Didn't we just say that a mute can't testify? So the Gemara says, "Katani mi'aydios amar Rav Yosef bar Minyomi amar Rav Sheshes beidus isha da'akilu be'rabanan." That's a limited edus. A mute can give edus under very limited circumstances. Specifically, edus isha. If a husband went out and did not return, and we don't know what happened to him. So the Gemara at the end of Masechta Yevamos has spent a couple of parakim discussing this topic, in which we accept many different types of testimonies that we never would normally never accept. A woman could testify, Shifcha could testify, an Eved could testify, aid me pi aid, hearsay would work. And another thing you can add to the list is even a mute. A mute could testify. So in other words, by Edus Isha, there are many leniencies regarding who can testify about the death of a husband, and that is to resolve the issue of aguna. So there, we're going to be much more makel. But this braisa does not mean that a mute can testify, because under normal circumstances, a mute cannot testify. V'haktani Yerushos. So the Gemara says, well, what about Yerusha? What was meant by a mute can testify about Yerusha? What is that talking about? Am Rabbi Abao, Yerusha's beno abachor. So Rabbi Abao says no. That's talking about the Yerusha of his Beno HaBechor. What does that mean? Rashi explains. We know that the Bechor gets Pishtaim. Right? Whatever everyone, all the other sons are getting of the estate, the Bechor is getting two times what everyone else is getting. Everyone else is getting X. The Bechor is going to get 2X. We also know, the Gemara, the Baba Basra tells us that if the father, before he dies, would like to allocate the estate equitably amongst his sons, and he would like to circumvent the rules of Yerusha, so what he could do is he could divide the estate before he dies. And that way, if he wants to, obviously it'll create discord, but we saw that again and again throughout Sefer Bereishis. So it's going to create a little bit of discord, but okay, but the father could do that. That's all the Braisa meant. The Braisa meant that the Elim, the mute, if he wants to give his Bechor, not Pishnayim, but he wants to only give him an equitable portion like all the other brothers, he may do so before he dies. That's all the Braisa means. The Katani Mia Lamasos Lamatanos, my love La Alma. The Gemara says, what about business transactions? It certainly sounds like the mute can testify in business transactions. Lo Lididay. That's not what the Braisa means. The Braisa means that he's a Baldavar, meaning he can conduct business transactions, but he can't testify about somebody else's business transactions, because once again, he can't speak. And testimony, by definition, needs somebody to speak. We're in Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. We are now two-thirds of the way down in the Amud. Just a quick recap. We have, first of all, established that the Mishnah, when talking about the Nishtatek, the husband who becomes a mute, so he can instruct somebody through a head nod in order to give a get, in terms of what the Mishnah means by asking him questions. So the Gemara clarified that he needs to ask a barrage of questions, alternating from yes questions to no questions, to make sure that the person has a cognitive ability. The Gemara today, and the top of Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph, quotes the statement of Rav Kana Merav, that if you have a Cheresh, he started off as being a bardas, and then unfortunately over the course of his marriage he becomes a cheresh, he becomes both a deaf and a mute. If he can write, that A, proves that he has mental capability, and B, the ksiva is a form of communication in which he now can instruct the giving of a get to his wife through ksiva. That is what we have essentially learned. We've challenged it. So far we've defended the statement of Rav Kana Merav. If he's illiterate, so then he's going to have an issue. There you are. Okay. Meitz for the Gemara challenges. Cheresh lohal chubo acheri mazosav acher kafitzosav v'acher ksav yado ella b'metaltlin. When you have a cheresh, so you can't follow him at all, not with any type of sign language, not with any form of communication that he gives, not even if he writes. When it comes to metaltlin, that's fine. Meaning movable items, so he could do transactions with the metaltlin. He needs to, so that kedei chayiv, so that he can live. But outside of that, no. Avalola gittin. But he can't instruct somebody to write a get. I'm sorry. Yeah, he can't instruct somebody to write a get, not even if he gives the written communication. So that goes directly against the statement of Rav Kahana Merav. Tanaihi, the Gemara says, okay, you're right. It does. And it's the machlokus tanaim. The time the Gemara quotes the Braisa. I'm Rishon ben Gamliel. Bamed var mamorim becheresh mikara. Ava pikerach ben ischaresh. Hu kosev behin chosmen. So according to Rishon ben Gamliel, if he was a bardas and then becomes a cheresh, and then he writes, and then through instructions of kisiva, he authorizes the writing of the get. Rishon ben Gamliel says, you can follow his instructions. Becheresh mikara lo kishem. V'cheresh mikara lo kishem shekonsa b'rimiza kach motzia b'rimiza. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If, let's say, he started off as being a cheresh, meaning as he entered into the marriage, he was a cheresh, so how did that marriage start off?
Darabana.
Not on a daraisa level, because he wasn't a bardas. It started on a darabana level. If you enter into a marriage on a darabana level, you can extricate yourself from the marriage on a darabana level. So, ibi ishto hachanami, the Gemara says, of course you're right. Meaning, point very well taken. Hachanami. So the Gemara says, we're talking about a scenario of Yavama. Yavimto miman. So the Gemara says, now let's specify exactly what we're talking about. If, let's say, he and his brother were both Harashim, could be genetic. So the if is he and his brother are both Harashim, so his brother only married your sister-in-law through a din derabanan. So now death, now yibum. So okay. So in other words, the marriage was derabanan, the yibum's derabanan, your marriage to the yavama's derabanan. Everything's operating on a derabanan plane. So ela denafalei me'achid pikeach. So the Gemara says, not yet. So the Gemara says very simple. In other words, we're talking about a case where the brother who was married was a pikeach. He was a bardas. He has mental ability. The marriage operates on a daraisa level. Now what happens is that he dies. Now you have the yavama falling to the brother, to the surviving brother, who is a cheresh. And so, but the yibum still operates on a daraisa level. And now what then happens is that he can't extricate himself from this marriage through a divorce because he's not a bardas. Right, correct. So the Gemara says, or maybe we could suggest, now here's the or. Or maybe we could suggest, and no, that what we suggested earlier is that both brothers, the dead brother and the surviving brother, are both harashim. And if that's true, so why under these circumstances can he not extricate himself from this marriage through a get? Meaning, didn't it start on a derabanan? So the Gemara says, gzera achiv cherish atuch achiv pikeach. So the Gemara says, and perhaps over here it's a gzera. In general, it's always a little bit challenging to understand gzeras by the case of yibum. How many cases of yibum are we talking about? But still, I guess systematically, we want all the cases of yibum to look similar to one another. And the Gemara says is that in a scenario where the dead brother was a pikeach and the surviving brother was a cheresh, we're concerned that this case is very not identical, but similar to the case where the two brothers are charashim. If the in the case where the two of them are charashim and the surviving brother can get out of it through a get, people will assume, well, it's the same, isn't it? Meaning if the dead brother was a pikeach and he dies and now the cherish brother does a mitzvah of yibum, can't you extricate yourself with a get? And it's not, and obviously the answer is no. So the Gemara says, as a result of that, so the chachamim made gzera. Ihachi ishtonami. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then why didn't the gzera just even extend to even if it's his very own wife? So the Gemara says, yivimta b'yivimta michlefe, ishta b'yivimta lo michlefe. So the Gemara says, look, if it's a case of yibum, so one case of yibum, another case of yibum, we may not know the fine distinctions between one case of yibum and another. The case of a wife and the case of yibum, everyone understands that those cases are different. The Gemara says, really? We really are ready to make a gzera of a case of cherish because it may lead to a case of pikeach. Why don't we consider the following vow tonight? A Mishnah in Yevamos brings us back to the good old days, beginning of Seder Nashim. Let's say you have two brothers; they were both charashim, and they were married to two women, and they were both and they were both of sound mind. Oh, shtei achayos charashos or shtei achayos achas pikachos v'achas chereshes. V'chein shtei achayos chereshes nesu shnei achim pichim. O l'shnei achim charashim, o l'shnei achim echa pikach v'echa cheresh. So hare elu peturos min achalitza umin hayibum. So they're going to be exempt from chalitza and from yibum. We know, we've discussed this at length in the beginning of Yevamos. The first parak we discussed it extensively. So we know that if there is any other erva outside of Eshesach, so there's going to be a patur from the mitzvah of yibum. The mitzvah of yibum only is going to circumvent Eshesach, but the mitzvah of yibum is not going to circumvent any of the other arayos. Now, if you understood that, good. And if you didn't understand that, then, you know, go back. We'll go back to Yevamos. But anyway, the Gemara over here is making one very specific point. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time with the Mishnah Yevamos. Please forgive me. But if, let's say, the two wives were not sisters. So in other words, right now, the only erva here is Eshesach. So, yichnesu. V'imratza lotzim yotziu. So, you can marry, and if you want to be motzi, you can be motzi. Right? And even though there's a cherish, and didn't you make the argument that we're going to make a gzera cherish atu pikeach? And the Mishnah over here doesn't seem to be worried about such a gzera. Ela machvarta kedeshina meikar. So the Gemara says, you're right. So abandon this answer of we're making a gzera cherish atu pikeach. Go back to the original answer where the original husband was a pikeach, and this one is a cherish. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Chalukin alav chaver v'arashim and Gamliel. Now, Rashim and Gamliel says that if he can write and communicate his mind, so through writing, so that would be a legitimate way for a cheresh to instruct someone to write a get. Rav Yochanan says that not everyone's in agreement with Rashi and Gamliel. I'm Rabbi Afanami Tanina. Nishtates lo yotzi nischarish. I'm sorry. Nishtates lo yotzi nischarish. Who? O nishtate lo yotzi alamis. If he becomes a shota, meaning husband and wife, they enter the marriage of sound mind. He becomes a shota, so now, unfortunately, he can't give her a divorce. He's not a bardas. Nischaresh hu o nishtata lo yotze alamis. If he becomes a cheresh, or she becomes a shota, so lo yotze alamis. So you're not allowed to give her a get forever. Now my olamis. Now what does that mean forever? Lav afagav diochla daber mitoch haksav. So presumably the pshat in this brisa is that even though he's a cheresh and even though he can communicate his intent by writing, still you can't do it because ksiva is not a valid form of communication. So this would seem to be a good indication that not everyone's in agreement with Rav Shimon and Gamliel. So Amar Rav Papa ilav dashmina Rav Yochanan havamina. So the Gemara of Rav Papa says, look, Rav Yochanan says that the Chachamim argue with Rav Shimon and Gamliel. And I'm fine with that. But if Rav Yochanan had not said it, this brisa by itself would not have been a good proof. Why? Because Rav Shimon and Gamliel, the first time at the Tanakama, who the Asa. Rav Shimon and Gamliel is just coming to explain the Tanakama. Umay olamis, afagav dechazin alei decharif, even though we see that he's smart, still, or the Gemara says that maybe the point of the word olamis is to teach us the following. A woman becomes a shota. May ikar hadin, husband can divorce her. Because we know a husband could divorce his wife balkarcha. Right? The kiddushin, marriage has to be entered with das of both parties. That's not true by gerushin. Gerushin can be done even against the das of the woman. So, the shota wife should be no worse than gerushin bal karcha. So the Gemara says that once we know that, and I know it's not, it just is. In other words, that's just simply the halachic reality. So once you know that, so then one can make the argument that, okay, even though his wife is a shota, he should be able to divorce her. That's why the Bryce inserted the word olamis. Olamis there is to tell us, don't think it, don't divorce her. Matam amru, ena miskaresha shelo yinagu bo min hagefker. Because once she loses her das, once she becomes a shota, so what happens if you were to divorce her? If you were to divorce her, you're now allowing her to basically be abused by anyone in the world. The Chachamim understood people need to take care of her. The Chachamim instructed the husband, it's your mazel, it's your zechus, it's your mitzvah, you're going to be the one taking care of her. And that's why the Braisa added the word, in that case, olamis. But not necessarily to tell us that if he writes and he shows that he's smart, no, that's not what the Braisa means. The Braisa just simply means, as a shota, if she becomes a shota, you cannot divorce her, period, even though you could have made an argument that you should be able to, but you can't because you need to take care of her. Okay. No, we have a couple minutes. Oh, good. Look at that. Okay, let's just quickly recap and then let's start the next Mishnah. We have so far seen today, we finished the discussion of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish regarding the ability to deliver the get during the period of Kordaikis. Rav Yochanan says you can't. Rav Yochanan says because Kordaikis is much like Shota, you're going to have to wait until the husband recovers and only then can you deliver the get. That's the sheet of Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish disagrees, but the halacha falls like Rav Yochanan. Then we went on to discuss an elam in our Mishnah who, as long as you ask him questions to make sure they have cognitive ability, so then he can, with a nod of his head, instruct somebody to give a get to his wife. And then, for really the most of today's daf, start on the top of Ayin Aleph and Aleph with a statement of Rav Kahana Merav, if you have a cheresh, but he can write. So through the communication of writing, he's able to A, reflect the fact that he has das, and B, properly instruct somebody to write a get for his wife through the instructions of his writing. That's a statement of Rav Kahana Merav, challenged over the course of the daf, both on the Amud Aleph and on the Amud Beis, but the Gemara defends Rav Kahana Merav. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is supportive of it as well. Now he's a Tana, so really it's the other way around, but is supportive of it as well, even though there are people who argue on this position, but the Gemara assumes the position to be like Rav Kahana Merav, that as long as he can write, that will be a proper form of communication. We start with the Mishnah. Let's just go through the Mishnah. Amar lo nichsav get lishtecha v'amar lahan ksuvu. So they say to him, "Let's write a get. Do you want to write a get for your wife?" And he says, "Write." Amar lo sofer uksav ula edim v'chismu. So you can then instruct the sofer to write. You can then instruct the witnesses to sign. Afa pisha kasvu v'chasmu v'nasnu lo v'chazav v'nasnu lo hare haget batal achi omer l'sofer ksov ula edim chasnumu. So he himself has to give the instruction that the get needs to be written and the witnesses are going to sign. Okay, now what happened? First of all, just a little bit of context in the Mishnah. Rashi over here in the Mishnah says that we're talking about somebody who is of sound mind, right? And the reason why he is writing a get is he does not want. Rashi says he doesn't want his wife to fall to Yibam. Okay, fine. Now in the first case in the Mishnah. So he gave instructions to write the get, and and even though the get was written and it was signed, the get is not going to be good until he, the husband himself, tells the sofer to write and he tells the witnesses to sign. Okay. The Mishnah is a little bit confusing. Let's present the problem, and tomorrow we'll deal with all the answers the Gemara gives. Taima de lo amar tenu. Hamar tenu nosnin. Now, what was the problem in the Mishnah? Why was the get not delivered? Why can the get not be delivered? It sounds like in the beginning of the Mishnah, the problem is the failure of the word tenu. We've said this already a number of times. In order for a get to be a valid get, the husband has to give two verb instructions. One is kisvu, and the second is tenu. So the problem in our Mishnah is that he said kisvu, but he didn't instruct tenu. Sounds like from the Mishnah ha'amar tenu nosnin. Had he said the word tenu, he would have given it. And mani rameiri damar milim himstern l'shliach.
Now with kisvu.
Yeah, tenu. Correct. Now that must mean that even though he didn't speak directly to the sofer, even though he didn't speak directly to the witnesses, but nevertheless, he instructed a pair of people to instruct the sofer and to instruct the witnesses. Oh, okay, fine. And what does that mean? It must mean that you can pass along instruction. Well, just a couple of days ago, we debated this issue. Well, we didn't debate it. Right, Rav Meir and Rav Yossi debate this issue. Rav Meir says, Mile lo mimsrei. Sorry. Rav Meir says, Mile mimsrei. And Rav Yossi says, Mile lo mimsrei. Sounds like from our Mishnah is adopting the opinion of Rav Meir. But meanwhile, Ema Seifa. But then read on in the Mishnah. Ash yomer l'sofer ksov ule edim chasumu. But then the Mishnah says, he must directly talk to the sofer. He must directly talk to the witnesses. Asan l'Rav Yossi. Damar mila lo mimsur l'shliach. Reisha Rav Meir v'sefer Rav Yossi. And that's confusing. In the beginning of the Mishnah, sounds like Rav Meir. You get to the end of the Mishnah, sounds like Rav Yossi. Gemara's first answer, simple answer, in Reisha Rav Meir v'sefer Rav Yossi. Yeah. You're going to just simply have to. It's a staggered Mishnah. It's really two halves. But the first half of the Mishnah is going like Rav Meir, where had he said the word kisvu utenu, even though he's not talking directly to the sofer and directly to witnesses, it works. Why? Because the ratio of the Mishnah is going like Rav Meir. Then when you get to the end of the Mishnah, where it says that he has to talk directly to the sofer and directly to the witnesses, is because the sefer is going like Rav Yossi. That's where we stand right now. Obviously, Gemara is never happy with that suggestion, that one Mishnah going like two Tanayim, and take the Mishnah and divide it to half. So you know what's coming up. More answers to this question.